In Haiti was I born as a slave. More than 150 years in the past, with a power I do not fully understand. I am known as Jean-Pierre Desperrois, and Destiny, she calls my name. Chapter 10. Freedom. The light of morning, it shines with much brightness through the entrance to the cave. It is this light that awakens me. I open my eyes, but no, I must to close them again. The backs of my eyeballs are in pain of much enormity, as if I drank too much claret last night, but of course I have not had a drop in many years, no? I roll over onto my back and I feel dizziness come to me in a wave of sickness to the stomach. My dreams were... what were they? These dreams, they had such vividness, but now they are nothing but the heavy gray of forgetfulness. Where am I now? A cave? No, I am in my bed, in my hut. Our hut. The hut of Isabelle and me. What was this cave? Perhaps in my dream last night I lived in a cave? Already it is gone, this dream. All that remains is a feeling of disease, of rot, of la mort. I do not like to have these kind of dreams, the ones that make you feel as if everything has gone wrong, but when you awaken, you cannot even to remember what it was about, that dream. I open my eyes again and look toward the entrance to our hut. It is very clear past the entrance. I see the trees and ferns of the forest outside with a clarity that I have never had in this place before. What is this new clarity? The dream of last night, it comes back to me. The heavy fog, the dogs, no, the wolves, Macandal in his throne of gold. I have never met the man before, but in the dream I knew it was him. What did we talk about? The memory of it, I've lost it, but last night, was I in a cave? I look around the hut and shake my head to clear it. Oh, the memories. It is like they are one image placed on top of another, like looking at a landscape through a window painted with another landscape. Another landscape painted to such perfection that you believe it is real. My head, it hurts badly now.
Good morning, my little cabbage.
The voice of Isabelle. It brings my eyes to open again. Isabelle. On the plantation, I always had my eye on her, but now that we have escaped together, perhaps that is the reason she has taken me as a lover. Best not to question such things. Sometimes when one questions a good thing, it can turn into a bad thing, no? She kneels beside me, a bowl of food in one hand, a bundle of white cloth in the other, which she drops on my sheets. I reach towards her. Perhaps she will indulge me with a repeat performance of last night, no? She pulls away.
Not this morning, monsieur. We have too much to do, or do you not remember?
I should remember, I know this, but I do not. The memory of last night, too, it has been erased. Now, I remember us in bed together, but that is it. As if last night it did not happen at all. She sees the expression on my face and she shakes her head. What? I say. She laughs.
Last night?
She says. What about last night makes you to laugh?
The jug of claret.
Claret?
Last night, we celebrated your full recovery from the box. Don't you remember? You drank quite a bit. Too much. Oh, my poor little cabbage.
She sees that I am confused.
What? You don't remember?
I shake my head. It hurts badly to shake it. How much Clarin did I drink last night to make my head do hurt so badly? Why do I not remember drinking any? Why do I remember nothing of last night? I remember none of this, I say. I remember with vagueness a dream, a fog, the howling of a wolf, Mockendahl on a throne of gold. She gently lays her hand on my forehead.
A golden throne? You really did have too much to drink. My poor Jean-Pierre. What else happened in this dream?
But now, the memory of this dream, what is left of it, it pulls apart like cotton, leaving only drifting pieces of white strands of cloud, and then these two, they blow away. Clarin, never again will I indulge myself with so much. And yes, now I do remember something about a celebration of my health. It is coming back to me now. There were several people in the hut with us. I can picture them now. I lie back down on the mattress. My head, it hurts much less this way.
Poor Jean-Pierre,
Isabel says as she takes my hand in hers.
You're so confused. Maybe you're not quite recovered from the box after all. I mean, it is a miracle you're alive. I can only imagine what that experience did to your mind.
The box. And before the box, the sugar cane. The whips. The anger and the frustration. The memories come flooding into my brain. Isabel and I ran away in the dead of night. She escaped, but I was caught by 2 foremen in an area of the cane that had yet to be harvested. They cut my face. They put me in the box of which I had heard but had never seen. The box too small for a man. The box from which so few had returned. Isabel and another rescued me and brought me to this place. And over the last week, they have nursed me back to my health. Why do I have a feeling that something is not quite right? That dream of last night, perhaps? The terror while I was dreaming it? Perhaps that is why I feel uneasy this morning now? It is more like a feeling, an emotion, not a memory exactly. Was Mockendahl there last night? No. I have yet even to meet him in the flesh. But the image of him and the golden throne, so real as if we indeed have met before. Again, I shake my head to clear it. Again, my head, it pounds from a hammer of agony.
Today is a very special day, Jean-Pierre. Mackinac told me he wanted to meet you. He thinks you are well enough to be initiated into the Red Sect. Of course he wasn't planning on having you terribly hungover. Maybe we should wait.
I sit up too quickly. No, I say. I am fine. My head, it does not feel so fine.
Here, eat.
Isabel hands me the bowl of food. Rice and chicken.
If you can keep this down, we go.
I eat slowly, one bite at a time. With each bite, I feel my headache to retreat and my strength to return.
Good,
says Isabel. She picks up the white bandal from my bedding.
I'll wait outside for you. Put this on. Then we go to Mackendahl.
She leaves. I pick up the bundle of cloth. It is a white robe. Why does this robe feel so familiar to me? I shake my head to clear the feeling of unease. Now to put the robe on my person, it takes but a moment, and I am now walking toward the door to the outside. As I get closer, the light, it burns my eyes. A foot from the door and my eyes, they are practically made to be blind. I stop. I is dared a feeling at the back of my head that I must flee this place. From what? Wolves? There are no wolves in A.T. Where to? The plantation from which I have gone? And my hand? Why is it touching my sternum as if to grab something hanging from my neck that is not there? I laugh to myself. This is silliness. But if my fear is silliness, then why am I not walking? I take a breath and move through the doorway to the brilliance of the jungle. The color green overwhelms. It is as if I have never seen such color before. There is a grayness in my head that has made me to forget the beauty of this place. As if I have not seen it more than 100 years. This feeling, it is so strange, the familiarness and the unfamiliarness all at the same time. It is as if I am looking at myself from a great distance. What is wrong with me today? Just a drink of last night, no? But never before has drink done this to me. Above the sky, she is a mix of blue and gray and white. The leaves of the trees, they form a lace of much intricacy with the sky of much beauty. My eyes move down the trunks of the trees to the ferns below and the red-brown of the forest floor. The ground is damp beneath my feet. In the empty space that has been cleared between the trees stands a group of wooden huts with thatch roofs. Perhaps there are a dozen of them. Each one is no more than 10 feet across, just large enough to sleep a few people, just like the hut where I come from, no? In the center of the circle of huts, dug into the ground, lies a fire pit. The smoke from the coal still rises from the meal they likely cooked last night. The smoke is a harsh smell. What is that smell? I recognize it. The smell of bad eggs. The dream from last night, it floods back to me. The terrible odor and the fog. The wolves. While I look at my surroundings, Isabel, she does not hesitate. She pulls me by my hand toward one of the huts.
Quickly,
she says.
Macindal does not like to be kept waiting.
We hurry towards the hut of Macindal. Past 3 other escaped slaves, a man and 2 women dressed in robes made from muslin. They look at us as we pass, but Isabel moves too quickly for me to do more than look back. Their faces seem familiar and unfamiliar at the same time, as if they are part of the new landscape that obscures the old. There's no time to think about that, though, because we are already at the hut of Macindal. I will have to duck to get through the doorway. A memory? It flashes before me. The inside of a hut too big for the outside. The light of 100 torches. Macindal towering over me on a golden throne. Why can I not shake this feeling of dread? Never before has a dream stuck with me so. We enter. Inside of the hut, it is dim. It takes a moment for my eyes to adjust. The inside of the hut, it looks exactly like the one from which we have come, the one in which we now live. Small, dirt floor, low ceiling. Why did I think it would look any different? In the corner of the room, there is a table, and on the table is a small black kettle, 5 or 6 goblets, and several piles of different herbs. Seated next to this table, on a wooden stool with 3 legs, the man himself, the poisoner, Macindal. We have never met before, but he looks just like the man in the dream. Strange, no? Why is it that it seems to me we have known each other for a long, long time? I find my palms sweat. My heart, it beats quickly. To meet this man is to make me nervous. He turns to face us with a smile of much kindness, then points to the other two stools in the hut.
Welcome, welcome. Sit, please, both of you.
My eyes, they adjust to the dimness, and there he is, in his white robe, smiling gently. Isabel and I, we both sit. Macandal picks up the black kettle and pours from it a dark liquid into three of the goblets on the table. He hands one to me, and then one to Isabel. Just like in my dream, he has only one arm. Steam rises from the liquid inside the goblets. I look at Isabel. Is this safe to drink? Isabel, she holds the goblet to her nose, and she breathes in.
Your best yet.
I lift the goblet to my nose, and I am overwhelmed with the smell of delicious coffee. Not coffee from India, but from far away, from Turkey. How do I know this? How do I know the difference? I do not know. What I know is that the smell, I cannot resist it. I take a sip. The taste, it is even better than the smell. But in the pit of my stomach, that feeling of dread returns. An image flashes in my mind of a beautiful woman in a black chador. Chador. How do I know this word? Who is this woman? From where does this image come? I shake my head to clear the image and the feeling of dread and nausea that comes with it. I let the warmth and taste of the coffee occupy my mind, and the feeling and the image of the strange woman, they are gone. Macandal, he looks from me to Isabel and back again without saying a word, taking us in with his mild eyes.
Isabel tells me you wish to join the Red Sect.
This is true, I say. My palms, they begin to sweat again.
Very good,
he says.
We can use a man of your strength in our cause.
He points to the table next to him.
My tools are very useful, but we need more than drafts and potions if we are to finally win freedom for our people.
I am at your disposal, Macandal, I say.
Good, good. I was hoping you would say that. I have a task for you. If you succeed, you will have proven yourself worthy of initiation into the Red Sect.
It is the moment for which I have been waiting, no? To be a member of his sect. I would do anything for this man.
Tell me what you wish of me, Macandal,
I say. Isabel, she squeezes my hand.
Your former master, Delacour,
says Macandal.
He has stolen something of mine, and I wish to get it back.
What has he stolen?
A small item. A necklace. Stolen off the neck of one of his slaves before he had that slave to be killed. That slave was a member of the sect, and that necklace, it now belongs to the revolution.
I nod my head.
The necklace. What does it look like? It is a simple chain with a copper pendant. It does not look like something of value. We can only hope that Delacour thinks little of it as well.
Necklace? Not even of gold? It would seem a dangerous task for a trinket, no? This is what my thoughts tell me at any rate. It is as if Macandal, he can read my thoughts. His face, it becomes dark.
This necklace is very important to me. It contains crucial information for our cause. And if it were to end up in the wrong hands, it could be our ruin. Do you understand me?
And the information you need, it is in this pendant, I say.
In a manner of speaking,
says Macandal.
Let us say that the owner of it has no idea of the power that it holds. We want to be sure he never does.
I think of the suffering of my fellow slaves. I think of the cruelty of our masters. I think of how it might be if we could break our masters. My heart, it beats slowly. My palms, they are no longer wet. Tell me what I need to do.
The mission? It is quite simple. We are to sneak into the house of Delacour, take the necklace, and return with it. I laugh, because while to say it, it is so simple to do it. It is not quite so simple, eh? But we have help. One of the disciples of Macandal, she works as a house slave for Delacour, and has given us the exact location of the necklace, along with a drawing on white paper of the floors of the house. It has been drawn with some crudeness, as if she were in a rush to finish it. Perhaps to be discovered drawing such a drawing would only draw the worst in her masters, no? But this drawing has enough detail for us to navigate under the cover of darkness, because this most resourceful house slave, her name is Isilie Danto, and like all disciples of Macandal, at the risk of death from her masters, she has learned to read and to write. This Isilie Danto, she has written into the drawing of the house precise measurement of each of the rooms and every piece of the furniture within each of the rooms. And when we arrive, Isilie, she will to meet us at the side door of the house and to lead us through and out again. It has all been planned with the utmost of care. Our ally, once again, is the darkness itself. We shall visit the house on a night of the new moon. The hidden moon, she will do much of the work for us. We of the skin colored black. The past 3 days, they have moved so quickly like a blur, like a painting that has not yet dried and which someone has used his hand to wipe the paint, or a vevey of much intricacy that has been kicked back into dust. Yet somehow these days in the camp are clearer to me than all the days before them. Strange. The past 3 days, they have been spent in training with two men whom Macandal has assigned me to help with the mission. Franz Rigaud and Patrice Filan are both small, skinny men. Both have been trained by Macandal himself for missions such as this. This is their seventh such mission in the last 3 months. The fact that they are still alive is enough proof that they are good at what they do, no? We have been left completely to ourselves during these sessions for the training. A perfect chance for me to learn about this place and about the sect from people who have been here for a long time. But when I ask Patrice and Franz about their lives before they found this place and about how it was that they met up with Macandal, they refuse to answer my questions. First, they change the subject. But then it is Patrice who tells me that Macandal has sworn them to complete secrecy on this matter, and they can only to reveal the answers after I have been initiated. I have noticed that even when I join Isabel at the camp, she and I are still left completely to ourselves. The others at the camp, when it is time for the evening meal, I have counted 12 men and 10 women other than Franz and Patrice and Macandal. They sit in groups together, but Isabel and I, we sit alone. There is something strange, it seems to me, that they avoid us so completely. What can it be that is so secret in this place that the people who live here cannot even to sit with us? But perhaps it is not important. I will get to know these people better after I have returned from my mission and Macandal initiates me. Meanwhile, I have all the company I can wish for in Isabel, no? Isabel. It seems I have never been without her by my side. Even as I try to recall a life without her, there is nothing.
It is as if my life before her is nothing but a dream. To get air for 3 days from sunrise to darkness, Franz, Patrice, and I have trained for this mission. On the morning of the first day, we study the drawings that Azalee has given to us. They tell us that we must approach the mansion from the east to the stairs that lead to the door at the back. Once inside, they say, we must make our way through a small foyer, then to the back stairs. The stairs are narrow, and on the drawing there are arrows pointing to different steps with notes that say which ones were to squeak if we put our weight upon them. Once at the top of the stairs, we must walk down a corridor past 3 doors on the right. At the 4th door, we enter. This is the door of the bedroom of the mistress of the house. It is in this room that the necklace, the object of our mission, it is kept. Azalee has written on the map that although the door is normally to be locked every night, on this night she will leave this door to be unlocked. She can do this because she is the personal house slave to the mistress. Franz and Patrice will stand guard at the door while I am to sneak in and to make my way to the small dressing table in the far right corner of the room. There I will find a box for jewelry that contains the necklace of copper. Once it is in my hands, we are to exit the house the way we came and make our way back to the camp. The total time from leaving the camp until our return should be 3 hours. The total time in the house should be no more than 4 minutes. After lunch on the first day of our training, Patrice, he takes the map, a measuring stick, and a small branch, and with much care, using the branch as a quill, he scratches the drawings of Azalee Danto into a patch of dirt in a clearing not far from our camp. But these new drawings in the dirt, they are not the size of the drawings in the drawings on the paper, no. They are the size of the actual rooms in the house themselves. We spend the next 2 days to practice moving through it, first to look down at our markings and to count our steps and our turns, then to walk through without looking down, finally, to walk through it with our eyes covered by a blindfold. After many hours of this, we can each move through the drawing on the ground without the use of our eyes, and without any mistakes, even to the point of avoiding the creaking steps on the stairwell. Mockendahl, he has made clear to the three of us that I am to lead this mission, that this leading of the mission is to be my final test before I am initiated as a disciple of the Red Sect. There is one final detail of our mission. Each of us has been given a flask of poison. If any of us is captured by the enemy, we are to drink the poison immediately. There can be no risk taken that the secrets of the Red Sect will be revealed to the French slave owners. We cannot allow ourselves to be tortured by them under any circumstance. Patrice carries an extra flask for Azalee as well. We have each sworn an oath to Mockendahl, to succeed or to die trying. The hour is 8 o'clock in the evening. The sun has set in the air. It is becoming cool. After a day in the hot sun training, it would be wise to get rest before our departure at midnight. So, to my hut I go, to sleep, I hope, for the next few hours. When I get there, Isabel, she is nowhere to be found. I lie down on the mattress stolen from our former masters, and I close my eyes. I must define Mockendahl. This has become a matter of much urgentness. There is something I need to tell him.
There is something I need to tell him.
No, there is something I must do for him.
What? Do him?
No, there is something I must do for him.
I can't remember. It does not matter. Once I find him, I
will remember.
Why can I not find her?
But where?
That does not matter.
I must once find I much
I will remember. I just need to find her. There are ancient structures of stone and of brick by the people. They're not dressed as people dress. They are dressed in a way I've never seen before.
The man, they were ants.
Instead of round ants, where they're wide, over-aiming bees, a crease on
not
the top.
A dry cone of
the men, they wear trousers that extend down to their ankles. The women, they wear dresses that extend only to their knees, as if the men and the women have switched roles. And here there are white men and white women and black men and black women and people of colors in between switch roles. There is all manner of men and women, white men and women, black men. Women and men,
horses to be dead.
I jump out of the way inside the carriage.
Together, all moving free.
Right, man. Macintosh, a carriage at a speed toward me. One eye is gray.
Horses to be
right. I run after him, but now my foot hits the curb and I fall toward a puddle.
Black
no.
Man,
it is deceit. Macintosh, he looks at me. One eye is gray.
I run after him, but now my foot hits
the curb and I fall toward a puddle.
Talking to a white man and what I can only do is a
unit
to
him,
but perhaps they have put a splash of water.
I ask him to
now I know what he speaks of in a world with many tables. And
he points towards
much
the
tobacco
doorway.
Smoke, talking
how
to
did I not notice
man,
this doorway?
I can only view
I'm at the doorway. At my feet I notice the vevey of the destroying sword. It must be close. Through the door, and I will find him. I walk through the door and I am in a large room that smells of La Morte.
One wall of the room is covered in large drawers.
At my front drawer is open and from it is the table. Lying on the table is a
dead. Through the door and I find it.
I walk through the door and I'm in a large room that smells of La Morte.
One wall of the room is covered in large drawers.
One drawer is dead?
No, it must be something else.
In this corner that leads from the room, I walk to it. Light streams through the small openings in the ceiling. On both sides of me as I walk around the
shop.
With the tags and words upon it that I can't Macintosh is in one of these shops.
And I see her on the right. A beautiful woman with skin on it.
With
a front light shut door to it.
Light streams in through small openings in the ceiling. On both sides of me as I walk around
the shop.
She knows the location of Macintosh. She beckons me with one hand. With the other, she holds a cup of steaming liquid. I can smell it. Coffee. Turkish coffee. She nods. And by her nod, I know if I drink the coffee, I will discover the location of Macintosh.
The tin in her hand, it is not to come shocking. It is turquoise.
It's a pendant made of copper.
Why did I think it was a cup of coffee? She knows.
The woman with eyes of turquoise. She holds it in necklace to me.
Take it,
she says.
It is yours.
My hand moves toward the pendant. Something grabs my shoulder. I cannot breathe. My eyes, they pop open. I'm awake in my bed in my hut. I'm covered in sweat. I sense danger. There is someone in my hut. In the darkness, my arm, it reaches around trying to grab at him. Skin, it's skin. I feel an ant grab my wrist.
It is the ant, a Patrice. It is time to go.
You have been listening to Salt, The Lives and Times of Jean-Pierre Desperrois. I'm Jason Newlander, and I wrote and narrated the story. Jesse Douglas provided additional voices. Buzz Moran produced this recording. Music by Adrian Quesada. There's more to Jean-Pierre Desperrois at theintergalacticnemesis.com. Salt is part of the One of Us podcast network.